I think we'll make a start. The final session before the dinner tonight is one where we look at this question that's up on the screen there. Why unionists ignore culture at their peril? The danger with a graveyard slot is that people will fall asleep. But I think that with the musical accompaniment there, there's very little danger of anyone falling asleep. Culture is a very broad term. But when we're looking at it here in particular, we're thinking about areas such as culture, traditions, heritage, and sport. The things that give us a sense of place, a sense of community, and a sense of belonging. You can see up on the screen there the representation, for example, Northern Ireland football team. It might be storytelling, yarn spinning in a country cottage. It might be, for some people, Irish dancing. It might be motorcycle road racing, or it might be a pipe band. All of those are just examples of culture traditions, cultural expressions that are enjoyed by different sections of our community here in Northern Ireland. Which leads me on to the question, what is it that culture brings to us? What are the benefits that culture brings? And I want to think first of all about the benefits that culture brings to the individual. For example, for the young folk here, it might be around the musical skills you learn. It might be about the social skills you learn, working with other people, cooperating with them in a project. It might be around the confidence that you gain by being able to perform. And I was interested over the summer talking to some young folk from the boys' ball school who were playing down in Newton Arts in the summer. And I met some young people from Glengormley High School the other day, and they were performing up in Ballymulloch. So people have acquired a skill in the school. They can take that skill outside the school and use it for the enjoyment of others. But the thing that struck me particularly about the quote that's up on the screen there is this. I put onto a blog that I run the comment about the visit that I made to another school, to Glengormley, and Voluntary Arts Ireland came back with a comment. And the comment's up there for you. Good to see young people enjoying cultural activity. So important and vital to their well-being. In other words, it's not me saying it, like you'd expect me to say it. It's not someone from an Orange organisation or whatever saying it, because you'd expect them to say it. But there you have an organisation like Voluntary Arts Ireland saying that that particular form of music, the fife and drum tradition, good to see young people enjoying it, it's vital to their well-being. And therefore we're back to this point that a culture is of benefit to the individual. And what I'm going to do is get the young folk there from the boys' model to come up, give us a couple of tunes, just for a couple of minutes there on the fife and drum, and then one of them is going to come up and say something about what the experience they've had there, the practice they've had, the lessons they've learned, what it all means to them. Because rather than me saying it's important for an individual or Voluntary Arts Ireland saying, it's much better if someone gives a personal word to say what it means to them. So whilst they come up now and get organised, and we're glad to have also with us today Mark Anderson from the Ulster Scots Agency, who's the tutor that goes round schools with fife and drum. And we also have the head of music from the boys' model school with us as well. So I'm going to hand over to the boys now just for a couple of minutes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dale Pankhurst from Belfast Boys Model School. I'm going to give a speech about lambay drumming and fifing. My lambay drumming and fifing career started off in 2008 when Mark Anderson, out of the Ulster Scots Agency, travelled to our school to give a talk about the lambay drum. Having been very proud of my culture, our teaching tradition, I jumped at the idea to learn the lambay drum and fife. Throughout my experience in the Boys' Mall School, learning how to play the drum and fife, I have been involved in a number of trips with Mark and the school, which included observing the school's very own lambay drum being made and painted, through to drumming in front of many important guests and many events, which included drumming at two cross-community events, one at St Patrick's College and the other here at the Le Mans Hotel. I've also been involved in lambay drumming outside school, where I am a proud member of the Shankill Drumming Club. I have been at many important events with the club, including drumming matches, and if you are on the Shankill during the summer months on a Thursday evening, you would hear the distinctive sound of the lambay drum and fife fill the air. I am very proud and privileged to play the lambay drum and fife, which are and always will be a unique traditional instrument in our culture. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much, boys, and thank you particularly, Dale, for those comments and explanation. I'm going to move on to the next aspect. We've talked about the benefit there to the individual. There's also the benefit to society, because I think that culture is something that binds a community together, and to borrow the phrases that I used a little bit earlier, it gives us a sense of place, a sense of community, a sense of belonging, and a sense of social cohesion. The third element that it brings is the benefit to the economy. Northern Ireland thrived on heavy industries 100 years ago when Belfast was the industrial powerhouse that it was. But those heavy industries have gone, and many of the jobs that went with them have gone. We need, therefore, to look in new directions in our economy. And the three areas in particular that my own department has an interest in various ways are around creative industries, cultural industries, and cultural tourism. And I want to pick up in particular on that theme of cultural tourism. Because what is it that brings people to Northern Ireland for a holiday? Well, it's not going to be the sunshine. It's not going to be the tropical climate. We need to offer something that is different, something that is special. We have, of course, places like the Ulster Folk and Transport Museum, we have the Ulster American Folk Park. And those are examples of the way in which it is the local and the unique that ensures a unique experience for visitors. The things that we have and which you can't get anywhere else. If someone's interested in going on a cultural holiday to see Italian Renaissance art, well, there's some fine paintings up there in the Ulster Museum. But you're not going to come all the way from America or New Zealand to see Italian Renaissance art if all we have are a few paintings in the Ulster Museum. You're going to go to Italy, you're going to go to some places in Spain or France or London, wherever. There are various places that you might go. But you might come to Northern Ireland if you want to experience the culture that is unique to this place. And therefore, can we give people a rich, a warm, and a welcoming cultural experience? I put up on the screen there an example of what I think is possible. Because if you're thinking of the American market in particular, the iconic figure in American political history, the man who's known as the People's President, was President Andrew Jackson. I was over in America there a little while ago, and we were speaking to a number of leading politicians over there and political commentators. And they made the point, all of them, in various ways, that he is the iconic figure. The fact that he fought with the bankers and didn't like bankers may have something to do with his particular popularity at the present time when bankers are not really held in very high esteem. But what folk did say was, whilst they have George Washington on their banknotes and they have Andrew Jackson on their banknotes, the thing that's different about Jackson is they have Jackson in their hearts. There's an affection for him. Now you see there on the left the picture of Jackson. You see there also the picture of the statue of Jackson, which is on the lawn outside the White House in Washington. This is a remarkably important figure. And we're sitting on the fact that Jackson's parents came from Carrickfergus. What I'm suggesting here today is this. That if we look at it, I visited the college yesterday along with David Hilditch, one of our MLAs, who's a counsellor there in Carrickfergus. And I also had with us Rosemary Lightbody from the Tourist Board, who's very interested in this possibility. We were looking there at ways in which you might take what is there in Carrickfergus at the moment and make it into something really much bigger and much more special. And we were saying, for example, if you had a giant flagpole there with the American flag on it in the grounds of the little centre, well, when those cruise ships are coming up the lock with all the American tourists on them, first thing they would see flying would be an American flag, bound to draw their attention. We were thinking about how you might celebrate American Independence Day there at the college, or how you might celebrate President's Day or Jackson's birthday. There are all sorts of things that could be done if there was some work done on that. And we were talking even about how it's the sort of project that could be taken forward by an Ulster Scots Academy. Because that academy would be able to produce an exhibition and experience that was accurate, that was authentic, that was entertaining. And that's the sort of thing that we need to have in abundance to draw in the visitors, that we have a range of cultural experiences. I'm glad that we had the Tourist Board down with us. I was interested in the fact that the previous time I was speaking to Rosemary Lightbody in person was actually on the 13th of July last year at Scarborough. She was there on behalf of the Tourist Board, and she was looking at ways in which the experience at Scarborough could be enhanced as a tourist experience. We need to take the things that are unique to this place, our culture, our heritage, our traditions, the American diaspora, all of these things, and use them to build up our cultural tourism product. The more visitors we bring, the more jobs we create, and the economy has to be very much at the centre of our thinking at the present time. Promoting Northern Ireland. I've got there three things at the bottom. Promoting Northern Ireland, connecting with global Ulster, and the Ulster diaspora. That iconic photograph of Graham McDowell and Rory McIlroy after the Ryder Cup did much to promote Northern Ireland and also Northern Ireland's golf courses. Because if you're producing good golfers, the thought will be in people's minds, well, they must have good golf courses to produce good golfers. And we have. We have some of the finest links courses in the world. So, here's a way in which Northern Ireland was promoted on the world stage. And there's more that can be done in the realm of sport. We did well in the Commonwealth Games with 10 medals, but we could have done even better. It was a huge increase on our previous disappointing success 4 years previously. We did well this time, and all credit to all of the Northern Ireland sportsmen who took part, along with the sportswomen, in the competitions. But we didn't enter a team for hockey. And we didn't enter a team for rugby. And the reason is that because hockey and rugby are organised on an all-Ireland basis, and because of the fact that you have to establish your standing at a certain level to get into the Commonwealth Games, they weren't able to enter a team. Now, we're talking about that at the moment. We're looking at that to see how, in 4 years' time, you can get a Northern Ireland hockey team and a Northern Ireland rugby team in the Commonwealth Games, because there's no reason why we shouldn't be increasing our catch of medals by having more sports that we participate in. There's also the issue in terms of raising the identity of Northern Ireland on the world stage and promoting Northern Ireland, that of course, when it comes to the Olympic Games, the team that represents Great Britain and Northern Ireland is simply called Team GB. So Northern Ireland falls off the edge, we've forgotten about it. And it's the important thing there of getting the team renamed Team UK so that it includes Northern Ireland. And I'm pleased to say that it was worked on by my predecessor, Gregory Campbell, in his time. We're still working at it. And he has raised the issue in the House of Commons by putting down an early day motion. And we met the Conservative Sports Minister recently to put the case to him. And we said to him, you say that you're a Conservative and Unionist party. Well, we're part of the Union. We ought to be there as well. So there are things that are happening on that front. I put up the other one of the American Declaration of Independence because it's an example of the way in which Ulster has made a contribution to America in so many ways. The American Declaration of Independence was signed first by a man from Mahara called Charles Thompson. It was printed by a man called John Dunlop, who was from Strabane. And there was so much around the Declaration of Independence that had Ulster connections. That's just one example. there are many others. If I was to say to you, what do the following have in common, or what's the connection with Northern Ireland? Fairy washing up liquid, Head and Shoulders, Gillette razors, Duracell batteries. The answer is, they're all produced by Procter & Gamble. One company produces all of these things. And the man who founded it, once was the co-founder of that company, James Gamble, was born at a place called the Gran near Enniskill. He went to Portora Royal School, and he headed off to America. I put that on the internet about that not so long ago, and we got feedback from Cincinnati, where their headquarters is. Because the house that his son built, the family home, was due for possible demolition. And they asked me to write a letter from the Culture Minister of Northern Ireland to the council in Cincinnati saying, please preserve this building, which we did. And as far as I know, it's still standing, and there's a move now to get it permanently secured. But the point is, here was an opportunity in a very simple way, just by putting something onto the internet, we'll be talking about the internet tomorrow, that you can make contact with people around the world around connections here with Ulster. There's a lot in that. So the benefits of culture about the Ulster diaspora connecting with global Ulster, promoting Northern Ireland. There's another view of culture, however, and that's the view of culture that comes from nationalism. Irish nationalism has a very particular view of culture. There's a quote up at the top there from Patrick Pearce, written in a magazine in 1914, where the organisation that revived, if you like, the Irish language, the Gaelic League, he said in 1914, the Gaelic League will be recognised in history as the most revolutionary influence that ever came to Ireland. The Irish Revolution really began when the seven proto-Gaelic leaguers met in O'Connell Street. In other words, Pearce was saying, and he was one of the people who was a leader at the Easter Rebellion in 1916, he was saying that the Irish language revival was central to the Irish political revolution. So this whole question of politicising culture is not something new. It's something that has been happening over a very long period, right back to the Gaelic revival at the end of the 19th century. There's a much more crass comment in below that from a man called Patrick McCreevy. He was the Sinn Féin culture officer, and he was making the comment there, now every phrase you learn in Irish is a bullet in the freedom struggle. I think I know where he's coming from. He was making in a very crass way at this point that again Sinn Féin's commitment to the Irish language and Irish culture, which really came about at the time of the hunger strikes, it's something that they saw as central to their political program. For them, it's a matter of broadening the battlefront, strengthening the nationalist community, and undermining the unionist community. Because what you'll find is, whilst they elevate and praise, naturally enough, their own culture, they then turn around and say to people in the unionist community, you have no culture. You have nothing to celebrate. You have nothing to be proud of. We have it all. Now, it's not only Sinn Féin do that. Brian Feeney and the Irish News does it time and time again, mocking unionist culture and the unionist community. And that sort of cultural humiliation that they engage in, where they try to humiliate people in the unionist community, is part of their agenda. I think we need to be aware of that, and we also need to be skilled in tool levels to respond to it. Which leads me to my next point, which is that if we're to create and change society here, and get away beyond this to a shared and better future in Northern Ireland, we need to explore and to explode a number of the cultural myths that have been peddled by propagandists. Time prevents me dealing with both. I'm just going to pick the one on the right here. This past week, we were dealing in the Assembly with commemorations. Sinn Féin were up and they were saying, what are you doing to celebrate and commemorate Easter 1916, the Irish Easter Rebellion, the Easter Rising? What are you going to do about it? So I took the opportunity of sharing with them a little of the history of the Easter Rising. Because their photograph, focus is very much on what happened in Dublin. And I say, well, we're here in Northern Ireland. Let's think what happened in Northern Ireland in Easter 1916. What happened in Easter 1916 in Northern Ireland was this, in Ulster. That the president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, a man called Dennis or Diddy McCulloch, he was from West Belfast. Diddy McCulloch gathered up 150 of his followers, and they got on the train, and they decided that they couldn't have a rebellion in Belfast, they'd go to Tyrone. So they took the train to Tyrone, and they got off the train in Dungannon. And they met up with some other Republicans there in Dungannon who were led by a man called Patrick McCartan. And Patrick McCartan said before he would take part in a rebellion, he needed to be assured of two things. First one was that the Pope had given his blessing, and the second one was that they were sure that the German guns had arrived in County Kerry. They weren't too sure on either front, so they all packed up and went home. That's it. The only shot that was fired was when Denny McCulloch managed to shoot himself in the hand on the way home. Now, if that's what you want to celebrate, if that's what you want to commemorate, you'll not have much to celebrate, and you'll not have much to commemorate. And if that was my record and something, I don't think I would want to be celebrating it. But between now and 2016, they will bring this up again and again and again. And it's important that we, from the unionist community, know the facts so that when they bring it up, we can share a little bit of the truth of history with them and maybe explore and explode a number of those myths. Leads me on to look at the issue of unionist culture. It's a term I'm not altogether comfortable with. There's the culture of unionists, but it's not quite the same. Because unionism is quite a broad church. And within the unionist community, there are a number of different cultural traditions. Some people will look at British culture, some will look at Ulster Scots culture, some will look at Orange culture. But within that unionist community, these are the sort of cultures that people feel an affinity with. And I think that we have a rich culture, and one of which we can be proud, and a culture that we can celebrate. We have much to celebrate. And I put up on the screen there three people who in their own way are people of world significance who come from Ulster and who were from the Unionist or Protestant community. Francis Hutchison was a Presbyterian from Drummond Lake near Saintfield. He was the foremost philosopher of his day, the father of the Scottish Enlightenment, and his thinking at Glasgow University was in the background of the thinking of the American Revolution. His ideas were taken across the Atlantic by Scotch-Irish emigrants, and his thinking contributed to the American Revolution. A remarkable figure, the greatest philosopher of its day, I would argue. Lord Kelvin there, who was the greatest scientist of his day, the greatest scientist in the Victorian era, and a man who was also proud to be a liberal unionist and chaired some meetings in the struggle against home rule, which is something that sometimes is forgotten about. A man who was a very evangelical Christian as well. Lord Kelvin was born, well, just across the road from Enniston, the centre of Belfast. Went over to Scotland, became the great scientist that he was. And his name isn't forgotten because the new connector between between America and Portrush comes in up. The new transatlantic connector is called Project Kelvin, using his name. You could take someone like Amy Carmichael, who was from Malayu. Amy Carmichael was a remarkable missionary, much better known in America than here. She was a missionary in India for 50 years, did remarkable work amongst some of the most poor and destitute and troubled people, and wrote about 35 books that are still published today. Amy Carmichael. These are people of world significance that we can celebrate. Pleased to say in my own area, because she did a lot of work in the Shankill area, set up a little hall there for working amongst the mill girls. And we got a wall mural, a beautiful mural done of Amy Carmichael. And there were some folk came over who had connections with her Indian work to Belfast to see the mural. So there are things that we can celebrate. We have that rich culture, despite all that the Republicans say, despite all that Brian Feeney did say in the Irish News. The fact is, we have much of which we can be proud, much that we can celebrate. Culture has its place in the home of the community, and it is passed on from one generation to another. But there are two areas that are particularly important. One is education, and one is broadcasting. And that leads me to culture in the classroom. I started teaching back about 1972, I think it was. 2 years later, there was a report published. And it was called the Bullet Report. It was published in England. It was called A Language for Life, but it was about culture, among other things, in the classroom. And Bullock said in the report this. He said, no pupil should be expected to cast off the language and culture of the home as he crosses the school threshold, nor to live and act as though school and home represent two totally separate and different cultures which have to be kept firmly apart. In other words, he was saying it's only right and proper that the culture of the home and the community that the children come from should be brought into the school. Now that's embedded today in the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. In other words, I'm saying there, it's not only right for the child, for the young person, it's the right of the child and young person. They have a right to enjoy and experience their culture in the classroom. Now how does that happen with nationalist culture? There, I have a little quote from Jude Collins, who was a lecturer at the University of Ulster in education, but he also wrote in Daily Ireland, and he still does a little bit of journalism today. November 2005, there was a debate at that time about the Roman Catholic maintained school sector, and he said, Catholics and nationalists need to fight for the autonomy of Catholic schools. Firstly, they provide a Catholic education for children. Yes, you'd expect that. Secondly, Catholic education supports a sense of Irish identity. Irish music, Irish games, the Irish language are a wonderful source of fun and fulfilment, as well as a rich heritage to be proud of. They give children an Irish lens through which to view the world. So within the Roman Catholic maintained sector, and also the Irish medium sector, there is a very strong cultural content and a very strong cultural core. Now I think that that's something that needs to be kept in mind. In fact, I was interested, I was visiting a Roman Catholic maintained school last year, and I was asked to go along to it, and they were reporting what they had done over the year. And one of the things they had done was, they had done a musical, I think it was Oliver, or one of these musicals that schools put on. But they had also done a play on the life of Robert Emmet. Robert Emmet was an Irish Republican leader and in the 19th century, the early part of the 19th century, and they'd done a play about Robert Emmet. Now I asked myself this question. That was, in their view, right and proper because they were catering for a nationalist community. But if a school is in a unionist community, is a school going to consider doing a play about the siege of Derry? Or a play about the boy? Or some other aspect of the political history of this country? There are different attitudes and different views within nationalist communities and unionist communities, within Roman Catholic maintained schools and other schools. And that's why the work that's ongoing through the Ulster Scots Agency of taking drama and also music into the schools is so important, because it's providing cultural content. Now, a couple of days ago there, it was the 12th of November, there was a quote in the Belfast Telegraph from a man called Chris Moffat, who was writing about education. And he was saying there, cultural identity, either individually or communally, should be respected in education. He was endorsing, because he comes from a background, I think, the support of integrated education, and did work with the Fortnite Education. As Chris Moffat was saying there, the importance of cultural identity and so on within the school must be recognised and respected. And that's my point there. It's right for the child because it's good. There's evidence that educationally, children perform better when in the school their culture is represented, recognised, and they're able to enjoy it and experience it. It brings the school and the community together. It's an important thing in terms of education. But it's also a basic cultural right and a human right, because it's laid down in international human rights conventions. That's one of the points we've been trying to make very forcibly to the Education Minister, the need for that to be implemented right across all of the sectors. Now, I'm not sure that the light's always dawning when we're talking to her about these things. I'm not sure that she necessarily understands what we're saying. But we'll keep saying it until we get through to her, because it is a matter of great importance. Culture in the classroom, the other area that's important is within the media. Because for any cultural tradition or linguistic tradition to thrive, it needs to be in two places. It needs to be in the school where it's affirmed and validated and passed on. But it also needs to be there on the media. And the question is, are we getting a fair share of cultural expression from the community that we belong to, in terms of BBC, UTV and the other channels? And there are issues there that we take up and are still taking up with the BBC. Final thing I want to say in this, in finishing, We live in an era when there's a great emphasis on rights, human rights and equality. One aspect of human rights is culture rights. And if you are to have culture rights and equality, then they have to be culture rights and equality for everyone. Too often we have allowed our culture traditions to be marginalised and excluded. And in many ways there is still a cultural establishment where unionists are underrepresented, and therefore it's easy for those organising events, programmes, festivals to forget about us or to ignore us. And that's something that we need to challenge. I was talking recently to some folk from Queen's Festival and saying, well, where are the things from my community in there? Where's the content? Just that previous week I'd been at an event out at Mossley Mill. It was a concert of Southern gospel music. So I said, there's a popular musical genre in Northern Ireland. Draws big crowds. When the Gaithers come to Belfast, you have 3,000 people in the waterfront hall. When's that going to be in Queen's Festival? It's as much part of the cultural diversity of Ulster as Irish traditional music or something else. Why is that ignored? Why is it left out? It's something that they've never thought about. Why is it that there is nothing from a whole series of other things? Why is it not in your programme? Now, they could have come back and said, well, maybe the quality isn't good enough. I did point out that one of the star turns in the Queen's Festival this year was Hugo Duncan. So I reckon if Hugo Duncan was of a high enough standard for the Queen's Festival, I think we should be all right. Culture rights and equality. If we're to build a shared and better future in Northern Ireland, it has to be in a position where our culture, our traditions, are recognised, respected, given their fair place. And that's something that we as a party need to work on, something that needs to be pushed in our assembly, in our councils, in every way that we possibly can. And I think there's a real challenge for us as a party and for us as individuals within our community to work on that over the next while. Okay. Thanks very much. We were supposed to stop 5 minutes ago. I'm just saying, do you want to take a couple of questions or just... Okay. We'll take a couple of questions just if anybody has a pressing one, or perhaps it is that you want to head off for the dinner. And I wouldn't have complained if you did. Okay. A deathly hush decision taken there, we'll head off for the dinner. Look, thanks very much indeed, and hope that was helpful. Thank you.